Welcome to the Wrinkled Engineer Podcast. Today, it's a boring topic. We're going to talk about building specifications. I strongly encourage you, if this doesn't interest you, to skip to the end when we start to have a little bit more fun. Victoria is going to tell us about her new YouTube channel. And Justin's going to revisit coaching Pee-wee football. Welcome to the Wrinkled Engineer Podcast. I'm Gates, and we've got a full house today. We've got Greg joining us again, as well as Justin's back. He's going to talk a little bit more. I know we can't get enough of it. Pee-wee flag football. And Victoria, she's joining the podcast for the first time. So welcome. Victoria's an architect. Greg, as you know, construction manager, project manager, owner's rep. He's on that other side of the aisle. And then Justin, all around, design manager, MEP. Anything else, Justin? Lead, all that fun stuff. Fire protection.
Yeah, whatever you want to throw in there, I'll do.
Yeah, he's got more. He's got more letters after his name than anybody else that I know. So, I think we've got a topic that we all dislike, but it's huge, important. We all have opinions about it. Before we get into specifications, please don't turn us off. It is specifications. It's boring. Victoria. Tim's not with us. We didn't need two structural engineers on the podcast today. So Victoria is going to be our definition queen, I think, is until we come up with a better title. What word, what definition drives you nuts?
Aesthetic. Okay, so I don't know if you guys are keen on the trend, you know, TikTok, Instagram, but there is a common problem today where I think I said the Gen Zs and the baby millennials, I'm probably also qualified as a baby millennial, but are misusing the word aesthetic. They're using aesthetic as an adjective. So first, real definition of aesthetic is a noun, and it is describing like design, sensibilities or a style in a specific, you know, all the same style.
A type of genre.
Yeah, it could be different. And the common misuse is aesthetic as an adjective, like, oh my God, your outfit is so aesthetic. Oh, like, let me show you these really aesthetic fonts, or I've got some aesthetic photo filters. And it drives me nuts because I think it started, like, in the beginning, maybe it was a joke, like somebody thought it was funny. And now I'm afraid that everybody just doesn't understand how to properly use the word.
They think aesthetic means it looks good.
Yeah, they think it's cool, or it's like vibe, style, but it's not. Like, you can have, you are not aesthetic. You have an aesthetic, and you can have a bad aesthetic.
Like the engineer in me, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So, as you can tell, Victoria, total architect, she's here to bring some balance to this engineer-heavy discussion. So thank you for that. I mean, I don't watch a lot of design shows. I do watch Victoria's new YouTube channel. We'll talk about that later. So let's talk specifications. And so we had a pretty good roundtable discussion about this. And something unique came out of this that Justin texted me after our meeting. Because we all, as design professionals, have more of a hate than a love relationship for specs. Victoria likes them a little bit more since she's an architect, and as an owner rep, and Greg likes them. But Justin, what did you text me after our roundtable?
I said, turns out I'm a big fan of specs, apparently. I didn't know that about myself until we, you know, don't like to give them that much credit, but they, you know, I found myself on the different side than I would have expected. So,
yeah, yes.
I guess I'm a big fan.
Love so that specs. That was a revelation that just, it surprised me.
It's like therapy. You just keep talking about it. You realize what
you got to talk it out. You got to go through the process.
I'm wrestling, you know, I was in denial, you know, we're in the process of working through the emotions of it. So,
yeah. And so I, for those who don't know what specifications are, you're listening to the wrong podcast, but I'm going to let Greg, as the owner rep, what are specs to you? What is it that they accomplish?
So specs for me, the goal of the specs really is to try to prescribe, minimum criteria, whether it's a performance spec for the way something gets installed, or it's calling out a certain manufacturer or material in, each application. And so, part of the goal is to level the playing field, so that way everybody is kind of bidding on the same process and material, whether it's grout in your tile, it could be, residential, grade grout, maybe it's epoxy grout, commercial grout, but, the specs are there to help, kind of create that minimum, that minimum pole that everyone needs to jump over when they're bidding and giving me pricing for, my new building, my new commercial lot.
So I hear uniformity because you're trying to take apples and oranges of the contractors that are out there. And they need to provide you with the pie at the end that you asked for. And then I suppose you probably also use it for enforcement when you don't get what you asked for that's in the spec. Okay.
Yeah. And that's the other part of it is it's, a lot of times it's kind of like meeting minutes as well. I hate doing meeting minutes, probably as much as you guys hate doing specs. But the problem is that you don't need them and don't use them until you need them. And that's when you're trying to enforce it. And so, if they're not done or done right, that's when I really rankles me, when they're really not done right.
Absolutely. All right, Justin, as you're not as an engineer, but as a design manager, what was it that made you realize, hey, I'm kind of a specs guy?
Well, I mean, part of it is the engineering side of it is the, developing the drawings. There's in the MEP world, there's a lot more things that you can't put on drawings, but there is the aspect of, liability. Now, the drawings do still control the ultimate liability, but the
here comes the 2-year-old.
Anyway, he was strumming on a guitar, so but anyway, the liability aspects of it, and getting all those parts in there that you need, and the quality is really where they come in. The drawings are going to get more into the performance of it, what you need it to, how you need the systems to operate, and what your goal is there. But the actual quality of the work is more in there, and that helps preserve the quality. And then also, like I said, liability starts to come in there, and making sure you cover all aspects of what you specify.
So for you, again, it's a liability issue now. You're trying to mitigate those right. potential missing information.
And I followed up after our previous discussion with somebody who's very familiar with the liability aspects of things, and they noted that the specs can hold up, but if you do not enforce them, so if you just have specs that you just kind of copy and paste, people say, oh, I grabbed it from this job, and they throw stuff in there, but you don't know it's in there, you don't enforce it, that can get shredded pretty easily in court. So it's still It's not a CYA. You still need to know what you're doing with the specs, but it helps get all those other little things, like a ball valve. What kind of ball valve do you want? What kind of materials do you want of it? Do you want it to be a single piece? Do you want it to have, multiple pieces so that you could take it apart and repair it? Like there's all like just the ball valve. There's all those different options. You're not going to put that on the drawings. It's just going to be a valve symbol. So
domestically sourced, internationally sourced, all those.
Right.
All right. So Victoria, as the architect, you kind of get stuck as the quarterback. You're the focal point of kind of organizing. You almost take responsibility for the specs more than anybody else. From your perspective, what are specifications?
Specifications are, well, a couple of things. So we've got the liability aspect, but also I think it shouldn't be seen as like we've got this to cover us in case something goes wrong. Ultimately, specs are going to point out where different disciplines kind of cross each other, because architecture covers such a broad field. There's architectural specifications, within masonry as like what kind of sealant you're going to use, mm-hmm. and waterproofing details, which make the specifications, if they're done correctly, will make these two people, hopefully, structural engineer and architect, communicate and realize that there is some architectural element in that. And also, so if you're thinking of like when you bid it out to a contractor, a GC, is this the person working on structure or mechanical, especially if you have a mechanical consultant, are they necessarily going to be reading the architectural drawings? So maybe you need that overlap so that all the consultants understand where they need to be working together and what sort of overlaps in the specifications as well as in the drawings.
Absolutely. So you guys, you have to be in all of it, which is something that I think is a struggle just from a time perspective for architects to really be able to dig into everybody's specs and make sure that all those little checkboxes are done. Now, I'm going to be the boat anchor of contentment. I hate specifications. Anybody who has worked with me knows that I cannot stand specifications. And it's not the idea of specifications. It's really I hate structural specifications. I see the need and I see the rationale for specifications in the architecture, in the MEP, in the fire protection, in lighting controls, in audio and video controls, all of those things where if you're going into a facility that already has something in place, you want to bring in the same equipment that speaks the same language that is consistent, especially over a large facility or a client who has many facilities. They have economies and performance criteria that will be met by having all of these things unified. The difficulty I have as a structural engineer is pretty much every product we use is a commodity product, meaning there's an ASTM, it's fabricated per that ASTM. If I buy steel from X, Y, or Z vendor and they have the ASTM and the bill of materials certifications, steel is steel is steel for that grade. So I'm not needing to specialize the metals I use or the shapes. There are some proprietary products we use, and they're so few and far between, meaning there's only three or four on each job, and they're usually epoxies or cast in place or post-installed anchorage, that we just notate that on our drawings. We can provide a little box that says, use this vendor's epoxy. And so it gets difficult when you start reading structural specs. It diverges into means and methods and a lot of architectural things like formwork. As a structural engineer, we don't really care about the formwork. We care that the formwork is straight and true and concrete fits in there and it doesn't collapse. And then you can strip the forms. But the architect may care about the finish. Is it exposed to public view? Is it in a basement? Is it underground? You may have other concerns about certain materials being used on site that are owner preferences, but somehow the structural engineer seems to get stuck going, of the 20 different kinds of formwork, which ones do you want or not want? And then you get contractors who go, you said cardboard forms were okay, and so, but we don't see where we would use them, and why are they there? And it just becomes very difficult to find that sweet spot between too much information and not enough information. It seems there's always somebody who's clamoring for more. To recap, we know what each of you is looking for. Specs are owner preferences is really what they are. And they are not required by code to be on the design documents, which are the drawings. Right? Specs are something that you can add to a project to supplement drawings. Where it gets convoluted is we talked about legal things. The Department of Defense and U.S. contracts sets specifications as the governing document that everything else is subservient to. So if there's a lawsuit, there's litigation over a contract or even a correction notice to do something, the specs supersede like everything that's on the drawings. My personal experience has been in private industry, it's the other way. The drawings are more specific and therefore have more attention and more power than the specs. The specs are like the catch-all. If you need to install an air conditioner, it's one of these brands, but the drawings tell you what size the air conditioner needs to be, which is more important than which of the three brands you choose. Is that kind of what you've seen in your dealings with, and it's probably not so much litigation as it is contractor resolution of conformance.
Yeah, I think that's, because really what happens is, especially on the MEP side, like you mentioned the anchorage and like the epoxies and all that kind of stuff. I don't think you guys have the variety of products that mechanical has, you know, for example, like HVAC equipment, you can have, I mean, out of the top of my head, I can think of 6 different boiler manufacturers. I can think of 12 different, you know, air handling unit manufacturers, and they all build things slightly different. So your specs kind of, I think to Greg's point, level level everything and say, this is the minimum quality we want to accept. And it is a lot of owner preference, but the specs are used in that, and probably liability is not the right term, but like you were saying, it's conflict resolution on the job, you know, in following up with people who are more involved in like lawsuits. Like I said, if you're not enforcing the spec and the spec's not, and you can't, and the lawyer can't poke holes in the spec, then it's enforceable. But if you're not enforcing it and the lawyer can poke holes in, like, well, this is inconsistent, then it goes away, right? But usually most jobs, they're going to get resolved somewhere in the, well, the drawings say this, well, what do the specs say? And as long as you can say, well, this isn't the specs, this was in your contract, it usually gets resolved that way.
Yeah, and I'd say in the private industry, like you said, it's the contract resolution that's probably outside of court, you know, because it's going to get really hard, and you know, it's only the really big private jobs that end up going to court because somebody really screwed up. And at that point, it's not just one spec that's missing, but you know, when you have one thing that went wrong, right, or you have one piece of equipment that came out, and your maintenance team comes out and says, "Hey, that's not the brand I like." You know, the engineer may have approved it because he uses it for the other owner and didn't really catch that, hey, my spec for this owner is Mitsubishi, right? Or it's, you know, another, you know, manufacturer. Then at that point, you know, you're trying to go back and say, well, hey, it's right. The spec does say that. And even though you have an approved submittal, you know, you're trying to then resolute something, you know, informally that, you know, you're trying to go back and say, well, what really is it? What did I buy? Who screwed up, and how can we get to the right product that was owed to the owner?
We're going to ask Victoria if resolute is a word in the way you used it. Sorry.
We'll let that go. Unless you make it popular on TikTok and then it's gone. So I think it's actually, I think it's unfortunate that specs are kind of viewed as the gotcha of the construction documents, because in the ideal world, we would be using specs as a design tool, and it would be more integrated with the drawing package. And I think the reason that specifications have become a gotcha is because often the design team, they use it as the, specs got my back. And maybe this doesn't apply so much to mechanical, but often I think I see a lot architecture, structural, that the specifications exist to kind of cover them, but maybe they haven't been thoroughly edited and there may be a lot of conflict. But it seems with the contractor, if the design team and the owner are pushing like the drawings, the specs just don't even get looked at until something goes wrong. And I think it's an issue on both parts. Like the contractor should definitely be reading the specs, and they see anything that differs from the drawing package. It's their responsibility to produce that as an RFI. But I don't think they're looking at the specs because the drawings contain so much information.
And that's, I think that's totally true, that the specs are really long in general. They're you know, you will open a masonry section and it will be 15 pages. And then there's a architectural masonry section, and then there's like a clay brick masonry section. And sometimes you check those boxes because you just see masonry. And it's not organized very well. So I guess we can talk, where do specs come from? What is it? Where do they magically appear from?
Like asking where babies come from. It's an ugly process. Shouldn't watch it.
So you can write your own specification, right? As a design professional, as an owner, you can sit there and say, we want Pella windows because that's what we want. Or we want, you know, like Greg said, Mitsubishi split air units. That's just what we're going to buy because we've researched it and it matches. So there's anybody can write the spec that's part of the project. It just has to get approved by whoever has, you know, control of that. But most engineers and architects, design professionals, the specification comes from two sources. One is a company that produces a master specification like MasterSpec or BSD SpecLink or any of the companies out there that maintain their own inventory of specifications. The other place they can come from is an owner who has written their own specs or taken a master specification, edited and tailored it to their own needs, and then they'll provide it to you to edit, either with a nice nifty tool or just, you know, Microsoft Word. The trouble I have with, again, as a structural engineer, is I get specs that have supposedly been approved by the owner, and there's been some structural committee that has gotten together and read every line of the specification and looked up every reference and said, yes, we agree, we agree, we agree. And you start reading it, and it's got codes that are a decade old. It's got method, means and methods that we no longer use. Like I said, there's 30 formworks, and you're going, really? The owner didn't have any preference on the formwork they use on the job site, even though they're responsible for material recycling and trash and all those things when they get removed from their job site. And so I find that the structural committees are not very active because we don't generally like specifications. We don't see as much value spending time there as we do on our drawings. But I have also seen MEP committees that are meeting weekly to discuss, you know, innovations in air conditioners and what, you know, should we switch our packages over to this system? And their specs are probably pretty dang good, especially as Justin said, when you're dealing with 24 manufacturers of air conditioners. And, you know, you can't expect your design team to pick the one that meets the owner's needs the best based on efficiency and maintenance and lifetime and warranty and all those things. It takes a team that represents the owner to equate and normalize all those preferences to select the correct models. So that's, I see they're not edited properly. And then to throw those out to the design professionals and say, you get to sift through. I mean, I don't know all of the ins and outs of every specification. So when they're talking about different ASTM standards, I have to go look at the standard to know which one is the most appropriate option. You know, with 90%
memorized.
Yeah. It's like, I've got the 10% memorized that I use in my general notes on my drawings. But once you get outside of that, the one that I love the most, because it's, we tend to think of, there are architectural chapters or sections, there are structural sections, there are electrical sections, there are mechanical sections. And in the structural section is the most intertwined with architectural. In steel specs, we start going through and it's like channel steel, wide flange steel, angle steel. All right. Yeah, I know that stuff. Check, check, check. We're using it. We're not. You get 2/3 of the way through the document and it's like, what shop primer do you want? And it gives like 8 primers. I'm like, as long as it doesn't rust, I don't care. And then it gets even worse, and it's like, what SPCC finish or preparation do you want on the surface to before you put the paint on? How would I know as a structural engineer what the appropriate level of preparation is? But I've had architects who refuse to look at that like section 9, I think it is, because they go, that's a structural section. Why am I looking at it? and you're like, because I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, I disagree with that. I mean, that's basically an architect relinquishing their right to that for like portion of the design. I think the architect should be pretty heavy-handed with all disciplines. You don't want to just let all the consultants run rogue and put air handling units wherever they want and vents wherever they want or coat the steel and whatever they want. So I think the architect is irresponsible.
I agree.
General disclaimer. No, we
love all in favor. Yep.
We like architects that do the job.
Yeah.
But we like all design team members that do the job.
Well, you know, it's funny you were talking about like the quality of like the specs, and you mentioned like master spec and BSD. The biggest example I always the biggest example of like a problem spec that's unedited is like the valve spec for that comes out of master spec. If you get like the raw spec, it is 42 pages of valves and it has every single type of valve. So I think you'll find that like the quality of those specs are just, they're like, well, here's anything you could ever happen. Right. And then somebody goes through it once, edits it down, and then they don't want to do it again because it was so painful. I remember going through it and it's like, well, how many times am I going to take these two kinds of valves out? Right. So then I think that's where a lot of things get, you know, that's why the owner specs, I think, are usually better. You know, certain bigger clients they've pared it down to the three people they want. But if you get somebody who's building like a complex, let's say somebody who's going to build like three or four buildings and they don't have any preference and any experience, they have to be involved in that process to edit it down. It's because a lot of it is, you know, do you want these air handler manufacturers? Or do you want these three air handler manufacturers? They're relatively equivalent, you know, but is there somebody who, you know, has a bad experience? A lot of times you ask an owner, like, what don't you like? You know, we don't want that on. So I think there's just a problem with like how tedious they are.
And it brings up one of the issues with editing specs is that you have to have a central file. There has to be, at some point, they have to be correlated into one file. And the software is really good. You know, doing it in a Word doc is tedious, but the database driven spec software is good because as you click and link things, it automatically formats, updates section numbers. If you're linking to another section and you delete a section, it throws up warnings. Or if that section moves, it, you know, keeps it all organized. The trouble is if you have separate design entities working on the spec, and I'm a structural engineer and I'm editing my spec and the architect's editing theirs and MEP's editing theirs, they all have to get sent to like the architect to correlate. And sometimes I always worry, how is that merge going to work? If I turn something off and you turn something on, or I edit a text, and, you know, who gets precedence? And here it is 2021, and we're finally, SpecLink went to a cloud-based version where we can all link to the common file, but you can't edit it at the same time. That's kind of defeats the point, except for it keeps everything organized. So if you're in it, that section's locked and only you can edit that section. So hopefully that takes a lot of the burden off of the architect from trying to correlate specs, because I know that was always an issue. It's deadline time. You're all trying to get your specs in and they had hard coded in a reference to a spec and you changed the numbering because you added a section or a paragraph. And then, oh no, there's a, you know, a broken link, and the contractor will find that when you're trying to get a change taken care of, and they'll find the one discrepancy that really isn't a discrepancy and throw it at you.
Or that's going to be the one section that you actually needed to have in the drawings because it helps you enforce a certain criteria that you just lost your ground to stand on.
So I have one last philosophy question about specs. Are you of the opinion that specs should be a catch-all and therefore should be a little more information than you probably need? Or do they need to be pared down to only the individual items that are going to occur on your job? So let's start with the architect. Victoria, which way do you fall?
I think they should be pared down to what is on your job, because that makes it more likely that the contractor is actually going to read it. And when they read it, everything is should be relevant and applicable to the drawings that they also have in their other hand. And so if we do the sort of encyclopedia giant handbook with every possible scenario you could ever get into, then people will treat it like an encyclopedia and they won't go there unless they think they have a question. And it's just that, you know, it's just Google. And they aren't actually going to be reading through and referencing it.
A very slow Google. Google search. All right, Justin, where do you fall on the fat or thin?
I think you got to make it meaningful. You have to pare it down. I mean, I think, kind of off the other point of if the contractor can poke holes in it, that kind of gets rid of your catch-all protection. But it should have all the stuff in there that you need for the job. You may have a couple extra things that are like, well, do I need this? But usually you should know what you need and pare it down. So I think it should be pared down to what's meaningful and needs to basically chaos on the other side of the camera. But it really needs to be pared down to be meaningful. It just needs to basically say what you need. You know, like you've heard the people say they're telling a story with the drawings. Well, it needs to complement the story. And, you know, similar to if you wrote a story and it was too long, the editor tells you to take out the stuff you don't need. Same. So
If the drawings are a story, I like to think of the specs as an index. They should have everything in it. All right, Greg, owner's rep, thin or fat?
Yep. So I think pared down conservatively. So I think you know, if you're maybe on the fence about a certain spec, right? I think it's better to leave it in and leave a thicker spec book than you might want. I know when I first kind of started doing a lot of smaller jobs, I often would get frustrated that I'd get, you know, a 400 page spec book. And I'm like, what are you talking about? This is a tiny little job. Like, why do I need all these? Right.
And that's, page, you know, of form work.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, I don't need all that. I pare it down. But then as you get to the larger jobs, you know, you kind of want all 400 pages or plus, really. You know, but it needs to be pared down thoughtfully and it needs to be filled out. You know, a lot of those, the master specs and
blanks. And whatnot.
There's blanks. There's links and there's blanks, and it's like you got to fill them out. And even if you don't know, right, you're like, well, okay, it's got this manufacturer and it wants me to pick an option for it. I don't know, but you know, I'll fill out the other one I do know, and then just fill in the blank with or equal, right? You know, something to that point that I think one, you know, it puts then the direction back on the contractor to say, okay, well, what's the equal? And then I think it also, you know, carries you, protects you on that catch-all, not the catch-all, but the liability protection, right? Because then that's one less hole for, you know, your legal team or your opposing legal team to poke a hole in to say, well, you didn't fill out, you know, these 300, you know, blanks in a spec doc. So are you really using the spec? So it's got to be pared down so that way it looks like there was some thought to it. And it's got to be thoroughly put together, which, you know, I hate paying for it because I hate seeing that dollar value. But it's, you know, it's a necessary evil.
Yeah. And I am on I like the fatter side of specs. But again, I think it's because of my structural background that I did all of my real nitty gritty paring down on my general notes and my drawings and details. And I'm using the spec as more or less a backup. And I always, whenever I get told, if it doesn't apply to the job, don't put it on, you know, delete it. I always come back with, well, we don't usually go into a new build with the idea that we're going to use epoxy or post-installed concrete anchors. But I can guarantee you on any project of size, you're going to need to use it at some point because the contractor is going to mislocate an anchor bolt. We're going to find that we need to expand something because there was a design change or something broke and we got it, you know. So why wouldn't I include that when I know that 98% of the jobs I've ever done that have concrete involved have had some kind of post-installed anchor that has had to be used? And I'm going to revise my drawings now that we're calling out a product. I don't, you know. So I agree with Greg. You want to be pare down, but kind of stay on the conservative side of, you know, if it's a high probability. And then the other problem I have, like I said, when it gets to like the paint spec inside the steel section, I don't feel comfortable deleting anything because it's not like there's notes next to it that say the owner retained this particular finish because of X. And we use this one for exterior and we use this one for, you know, there's no guidance. So you're trying to guess, well, why did you pick level 7, 15, and 21 and not 3, 6, and 2, right? Like, they're all the same to me without going and like looking up what the basis for each of those products, you know, water cement ratio of concrete. There's no governing rule. There are some minimums and maximums in the ACI code that tell you what you need to do for concrete. There are some recommendations, but ultimately there's an owner preference for the benefits versus the costs of having a lower water cement ratio. And so I look at those and go, I assume the owner picked the ones they want, so I'm not going to touch those. And that's the way I feel about a lot of sections. Like, the owner must have picked this for a reason. Who am I to say that's the wrong ratio unless there's a specific design criteria they've asked me to meet that I know this is in conflict of. But just blanket, when it's out there and there's no concerns, you know, I accept a lot of default values that I'm like, I don't know what that is because I didn't look it up.
Wow.
Because as Greg said, he's got to pay for it, but he's not going to pay me 100 hours to do every spec that I do for the project and go make sure that every link reference is correct when that's really, to me, the job of the owner. If you're going to provide me with a spec, you've vetted it. This is your approved document. I am just going, okay.
What would your approach be on a job of size, but it's an owner that doesn't have specs? Because there's a lot of those out there, too. So you would leave it, you think you would leave it default? Or would take it out? Or would you ask the question? I mean,
I've really only had...
professional judgment.
The only time that I've had to do specs has been for government contracts and large owners that have a spec. I can't think of a... until I moved to Florida. My time in the Midwest, my time in California, my time in Arizona, most of my owners didn't have specs. And since I worked in most of those jobs, I was not in a multidiscipline team. I was structural engineers only. We just kind of... nobody ever sent us a spec. It was really rare. We would generally get sent a spec that said, just make sure you meet these criteria. And we would go find the stuff that we needed to put on our drawings. But until I started working for the Big D, I never put together specs. Right? Mm. Because none of my owners cared enough, because they were all developers who were not going to use the property. They were going to build the property and sell it, or they were going to build a retail center and lease it. Even some of my larger industrial facilities, because they weren't trying to standardize anything. It was all equipment being brought in there, you know, probably electrically and mechanically was important, but their foundations, once they were in, they weren't a maintenance issue. And so, but for some reason in Florida, there seems to be a lot of every project wants specs. So I haven't done a lot of vanilla specs. I mean, I've done a few out of master spec, and you know, usually they're small enough projects, you pare them down to, you know, but it's redundant. I end up with carbon copies. And then I'm sure Victoria loves when the drawings say one thing and the specs say something completely different. But that's been my experience. I don't know. What do you do, Justin, when you have a vanilla spec project?
I you know, it's interesting. I'm trying to think of what I have now, you know, like, the last project I'm thinking of was an owner that had a campus, but they didn't have a master spec. So it was basically, we asked the major parts and pieces, and then we pared down what we thought they needed, you know, and then a lot of times, you know, what's your tube thickness? Well, you know, like the spec for like a built up air handler, like a chilled water air handler, it gets into like, well, here's how the coil is constructed. It's this thickness of tube, has these many fins. You know, you generally will edit it to your basis of design piece of equipment. And hopefully you get the contractor that respects if the owner does have that preference, which they did in that case. So we try to edit down to whatever our basis of design is. And if somebody can pick an equivalent, they can get an equivalent in there. But
yeah, so with
a lot of engineering judgment, I guess is what you would call it.
I would say that structurally, the owner's got to have some really peculiar situations that require them to say, you need to do it this way. Yeah. I'm thinking like the Space Center probably has a few things. Those who aren't familiar with the wonderful document that is the Epcot code, you're missing out. One of my favorite sections of the Epcot code is it has animal loading for fences, for enclosures, like elephants and rhinos and gazelles, which is obviously very specific to the client, that the jurisdiction that uses this. They have a large asset that has lots of animals. That's something that, you know, it's not in ASCE 7. It's not in the building code. It's nice to have a spec or a, you know, animal care guide, so that as a structural engineer, I know how to contain some of these animals. That's, you know, those are things where, yes, I would love a spec as an engineer, but I've got a secret for a lot of building owners out there. Your building is not unique, especially structurally. It's not that special. I'm sorry to say it, but
the criteria is don't kill us.
Yeah. You're all at the same baseline, because you're not telling me the wind load, the building code is. You're not telling me the seismic criteria, the building code is. You're not telling me how much things weigh. You know, so unless you have something unique, like a space shuttle that needs to launch, you're probably not going to stump your structural engineer. They can get what they need to from the building code. Greg, you wanted to finish up. You had kind of really what summing up specs. They're important, but
yeah, they're important and they need to be done, you know, and the effort should be put into them, especially if you're getting, you know, vanilla clients or vanilla specs with new clients. You know, the conversation should be had to say, well, what is your maintenance team like, or what does you prefer? So that way you can inform the specs. Nobody wants to pay for them because, like we've talked about, they're a ton of hours. But, you know, but they have to be done. You know, they're a necessary evil, and, you know, they need to be there to kind of safeguard everybody. You know, like for a lot of the points that we've made. So unfortunately, they're not going away, and we just got to embrace them and figure out how to make them as user friendly and as smart as our TVs.
And my advice to owners, especially if you want to have a spec, invest in the time with internal committees to vet very precisely what your criteria is, so that you don't have to pay every time you do a project 1,000 hours to your design team. They can cut that into a tenth if you're very concise, and if there's stuff you never use, delete it. Don't even keep it. You know, if you come up to that one exception, you can add it back in. You know, we can have a conversation about that, but pare it down to what you do 98% of the time, and you're going to save your design team so much time, and consistency will go way up. So anything else on specs? This is the one I was dreading.
Why? It's so fun.
Yeah, I don't know. Specs. I love to complain about specs.
Frankly was getting bored myself as I was speaking. It was not against anybody else on here, but just myself. I was boring myself. So.
Well, something more exciting. So, Victoria, what, 5 weeks ago? 4 weeks ago?
Five now, yeah.
Five. She's been on YouTube with her channel, Design Shing, which is awesome. It's a fun 15, 20-minute videos. They're great. Can you, what's it about? What are you doing with this?
Well, thank you for watching. And Design Shing is, well, DIY and design. So I'm a DIYer because I live in an apartment and I can't hire contractors to come out here and do whatever kind of work I want or anything like that because not allowed. So anything I do, I have to do for myself. And also, you know, money wise, I'm younger. I don't have like the kind of money to spend on an apartment that I don't own to like make it nice. So I've been sort of delving into the DIY route, but also I have a background like formally trained in architecture and professional experience. And so something that I realized was kind of maybe not so there in the DIY world is that professional experience kind of backing it up. So in my videos, I talk a lot about, I talk about safety and also be safe. That's a big one that like just gets me when I see people doing things dangerous. I don't think it's because they're trying to be dangerous. I think maybe they just don't understand what they're doing is dangerous or, you know, unsafe. And then also sort of integrating design philosophy as we go. And I am very willing to admit that I don't always know what I'm doing. I'm trying things out for the first time, so I'm not an expert by any means. And whenever anybody else wants to attempt that, you know, I would recommend that they look at a lot of people's videos. This is me just trying out. I'm not trying to be a master. I'm just going for it.
You made a comment in one of your videos that made me laugh because you we're talking about how horrible it was to work in the shop in like sandals, which I've been known to do quite frequently because my wife doesn't want me to track, you know, sawdust into the house. And so I keep a pair of slippers in the shop door and they come off when I go into the house and they come back on. And I'm a little bit, you know, at work, I'm very safe, but at home it's in my own castle. I'm a little bit lenient about,
I think that's true for a lot of us. It's easier to tell the other person to you know, move the ladder and put the hat on and the safety glasses. But we get home and we're comfortable in our house too. That's the other part of safety. We're comfortable in our house.
Yeah, I took a piece of purple heart wood to the eye because I wasn't wearing safety glasses about 2 months ago. And yeah, I'm sure Victoria would. You can watch the video. I mean, I wish I had had video of me shooting it in my eye, but it was in the middle of one of my builds. And yeah, that was the first thing my brother-in-law said. He's like, did you get video of that? And I'm like,
that would have been the most popular podcast, is you getting shot in the eye with a piece of
wood. Oh, I know, absolutely.
Nearly blinding yourself.
And then my brother's, I've got a Amazon stack of 30 eyeglasses that my brother sent to me.
Nice.
But you can see the end result, the blood in the eye, during my my router gantry build. That's when it happened. I was testing it out and I got a little bit overzealous, and it was real. I couldn't have lined it up any better, but there was no damage. So safety is important. Take care of yourself, but don't watch my channel.
I try to be safe if I'm being like videotaped, right? Like, and if I know other people are watching me, I want to demonstrate a safe method. But I have, in some situations where I didn't have proper eye like protection, just kind of close my eyes. And...
your soft eyelids will do so much. My favorite is when I nail like a corner together with the nail gun. I always move my fingers to. You know, but sometimes you use really long nails, and I have, not on camera yet, but I've poked my finger just enough, and it's like, but there's no way to hold that corner. And
you could use a clamp, Gates, a clamp.
Not on a 24-inch by 24-inch cabinet. It's tough.
Or another thing, I've got clamps. Jim Hareka told me this: super glue, yes. And then come in with your mechanical fastener.
Yeah, that's a little slow, but no, I like Jim. He and I converse on LinkedIn all the time. Well, thank you. I look forward to the channel. Not that I'm bitter. Well, I am, because I'm the wrinkled engineer. But Victoria surpassed my subscribers on her first video. So,
well, wait till they see the spec podcast.
Yeah, I know. We're going to be leaving in droves. So
through
you
got to
hit
too.
That button. You got to hit those buttons and subscribe and like.
Hit the
and
bell.
All that kind of stuff.
Hit the bell.
Yeah. Smash, you got to sign it off with smash that like button, guys.
I'm just not flashy enough. I'm an engineer. This is not what I do for a living. Well,
this is
you,
your aesthetic, right? This, is that the right way?
No, he is aesthetic.
Yeah,
oh, right. He is aesthetic. Yeah.
It's a horrible aesthetic, but it is. All right, thank
aesthetic
you. We look
as Gapes Brown.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing what you've got coming up next. So it'll be fun to watch.
Oh, a new video just launched today.
Oh, I'll have to go check
it's
it out.
A fun one. If I can promote it.
Yes, go for it.
I made over, extreme makeover, my boyfriend's bedroom, and he did not ask me to do that.
Oh, no. I'm going to just fast forward to the reveal just to see what the reaction was. Awesome. I will have to check that out tonight. All right, Justin. So you just finished flag football a few weeks ago. And
yeah,
I had
weeks.
You were talking to us in the fall about the last time you did flag football. And it wasn't a great experience. So what possessed you to do it again?
It wasn't a great, wins-loss experience. I don't know, it was fun to do, I suppose. Yeah, it was. No, I did it again, right? So it was fun enough. I'm trying to think, actually, the interesting thing is spring is the much more popular season. So we had 5 teams in our age group. There was 8 teams in the spring, so they really needed coaches. And my assistant coach left me, so this time it was actually just me by myself. I had no assistant coach. I had one of the moms help me out a little bit. One of the dads, they would come and help me. But I did it with my son likes it. He likes having me around. So I guess that's a good thing. I'll hold on to that.
He's not old enough yet.
Not old enough yet to hate me.
Okay. I've got 2 of those in the other room.
Yeah. You got to keep the clock's counting down like 4, probably about 4 more years. So, he enjoyed me coaching. It keeps him interested in the game. And, I learned, the big thing I learned is I wasn't there to pick the kids. Like, I didn't go to the draft because I was sick. So the director picked the team for me, and he's much better at picking kids than I am, it seems. I kept 3 of the kids from the fall team. You're only allowed to keep 3 kids. One of them is my son, and then 2 other ones.
Why'd you keep that one?
Hey, he's all right. Well, then the other thing was, I said, one of the big problems was no quarterbacks. I told my son, hey, you got to learn how to throw a football. And we did a lot of throwing. And so I learned, forced him to learn quarterback. And then we had a lot of fast kids. Makes it a lot faster, a lot more fun when you're winning and scoring touchdowns. And so I was crying.
In the fall, you had kids laying down in the field and running the wrong way or running away mm-hmm. from you. And mm-hmm. all. I mean, it was much more fun to talk to Justin after a football game last year than it was this spring, because you didn't have any of these like super funny experiences other than a couple.
No, I mean, the kids, you know, and I don't know if it was just how he picked the kids or what, but they were in general really good. They all listened, you know, they all wanted to play. There was no kids that were being forced to play. I may have had a couple of those before. So they all wanted to play. Now, with any group of 7 to 8 year old kids, as they get more and more familiar with themselves and each other, it gets a little crazy. But I had that's where the moms and dads came in. I'm like, just don't let them like tackle each other and, you know, insult each other's moms and push each other and all the stuff that they do when you're not, you know.
So do you think that a part of the success was that you were better equipped to
deal with? It's probably some of that. I mean, I learned.
Or it's all the kids' fault.
And, I probably learned something, you know. I think I learned to keep them a little busier. But I think it went well, because there's also the kids have to want to play. And when they're that young, if one kid sits on the sideline and just is like, well, I want to talk about, you know, I don't even know, whatever, I want to talk about this YouTuber, they all want to talk about him. Right. So it's really important that they all want to play.
Is that YouTuber the Wrinkled Engineer?
No. Oh.
Design Shing?
Maybe I heard that name.
I'm going after the wrong demographic.
You don't have enough jump cuts in yours. It was fun. We got to run a lot. We won. We went into the tournament ranked fourth or third. We were ranked like the third place team. We were ranked. Dude, the coaches rank. So that's like last year. I said they broke my heart when I was dead last.
What's like college sports?
it's college football. Like last time it was like I knew it was coming, but when you see it on paper, you're like, oh wow, I'm last place. And then you're, you know, so this time wasn't. Yeah. So this time we were winning. We had some fast players, learned to not throw the ball so much. I like to throw the ball. So we didn't do a ton of that, a lot more quick throws. And then a lot of handoffs and reverses. It's fun. Couldn't run power football. Our team was a little bigger this time, that we were built for like a power running game, but you can't hit people.
And Greg, you said you started coaching soccer.
Yeah, this will end up being my second full season coaching. Last spring got cut short by the favorite topic of everybody these days. But
yours is little guys, right?
Mine's even littler. So mine's 5 and 6. So you know, a year and a half ago, fall was his first year playing, and you know, I think same thing. I think every dad gets into coaching because, you know, the emails come out. We still need coaches. We still need coaches. So you
that's
know,
nice. Ask somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. And you learn some, you know, in my first season, you know, we had a really young team, a lot of newbies, you know, new kids playing soccer for the first time. And so, you know, I don't think we won any game. And you know, this season, I think we still have a kind of a young team, but now my son's on the older end of the 2 year, you know, stuff. So it's a little bit more fun to watch him kind of progress and start to take more control. But it really is a lot of entertaining the kids enough during practices, so that way they're learning, they're staying focused, but you know, they're always corralling around something. So you got to keep them busy, you know, busy work with, you know, drills and stuff that can be fun.
So little kid soccer is the only soccer I'll watch, because I just love watching the the group of flamingos follow the ball around the field. It's just so hilarious, and they just, you know, and the ball will go way over there, and everybody's got to go. And that's it just makes me laugh.
That's it.
You're not coaching any sports, are you, Victoria?
No, but I do have a recommendation for you guys. You all have Disney Plus, right? The Mighty Ducks D3 TV series revamped. It's definitely made for like kids, but I find it entertaining. And it's about like a mom who is coaching her son's hockey team because he got kicked off the Mighty Ducks and they suck.
I remember when that movie came out. I remember the original.
Is it based on the same storyline? Is it continuing?
It has Coach Bombay. Emilio Estevez is on the show.
Oh, he does.
I'm glad he's got work. He's worried about
you
that
were
guy.
Worried about him? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a while since you've seen him in anything. Yeah.
You never know with these guys, you know.
I'm glad you keep up on, enough to be concerned.
I always worry about Emilio Estevez. Is he all right? Is he going to make it?
On that,
saw his brother. Well, he saw his brother. Anyway,
yeah,
a different podcast.
Yeah, we can devolve into entertainment news anytime you want. Well, thank you, the three of you, four of us. It's quite a crowd, but I like the format. Thanks for your input. I hope you all have a good night, and thank you for joining the Wrinkled Engineer. I'm Gates. Check out Victoria. We'll link to her channel below. And you can check out Greg and Justin if you want to. Justin's on Twitch.
We're not plugging that.
We're not going to plug that. You're going to
plug a Twitch.
You're going to have to find him So
keep that under wraps. That's just me blowing off steam.
Again, follow us all over social media. Have a good one. Good night.
See ya.